A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch.
The lights probably gone.
So had the stairs.
You are just number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 458. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are continuing our discussion about Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello. This was a BBC One series from 2015. In 7 one-hour episodes, we get an alternate history of an early 19th century England, quite similar to the one we know, but in this case, magic is real, although it's still rather rare. There aren't that many practitioners of it, but two practitioners of magic, two rival magicians, deal with the consequences of their actions. As we discussed last time, magic has very distinct consequences in this world. And they have to deal with a darker and much more dangerous magical realm that they're starting to increasingly interfere with and be affected by.
Yes, absolutely. So continuing on from what we talked about last time, Jonathan Strange has become the British Army's magician. He's referred to as Merlin by the Duke of Wellington and his officers, and his actions help to turn the tide in Britain's favor, and this continues up to the very bloody Battle of Waterloo. Meanwhile, Gilbert Norrell is reminded of the high costs of his magic as his dealings with the gentleman, this fairy king, exact their toll on Emma Pole's mental health. And also, they will extract a cost for Mr. Norrell himself.
Yes, because she is becoming increasingly distressed and disturbed. Her behavior is becoming extremely strange and difficult to control. She will try and kill Mr. Norrell in an assassination attempt that goes wrong. We talked last time about her attempts to explain what's happening to her in this magical world. I seem to be hampered by some sort of magical charm. You described it very well last time, Brian, that whenever she tries to talk about this, just word salad comes out. She has met and been befriended by Arabella Strange, Jonathan Strange's wife. But of course, this brings Arabella Strange into the orbit of the mysterious and distinctly dangerous The Gentleman. And of course, this will lead to Arabella Strange being transported to The Gentleman's magical realm and away from this world. And that will have considerable consequences for our two title characters.
Yes, and as the years pass, we sort of move towards a confrontation with this fairy king, the gentleman, the ruler of this magical realm, and possibly the return of the Raven King, who is this mythical character that has been referenced all along.
Yeah, it's great to have a sort of very mysterious, dark figure like the Raven King, this sort of obscure character from English magical history that they keep referring to. You know, it's wonderful stuff. The threat of the Raven King is always with us in this show.
Yes. And we have these interesting sort of alternate history ideas that we're looking at London and other parts of England, sometimes other parts of Europe, in the early 1800s, in this world where you have magic sort of running through the middle of the story, but otherwise it looks like early 19th century Europe.
Yeah, and I thought this was very interesting, particularly with, you know, over here in the UK, our obsession with this period, particularly for the Jane Austen novels and the various adaptations of the Austen novels, even a series that we covered here on British Invaders, Lost in Austen. And of course, as we record, the latest series of Bridgerton is showing on Netflix and is a huge show at the moment. And I did think that this show gives us a nice contrast to that wonderful sort of, you know, balls and gowns and upper middle classes and money and so on. This gives us a slightly more grim and gritty look at parts of the UK and Europe and the things that were going on. The fact that we were at war with France pretty much all the way through that period, Brian, is brought home more to us in this show. And of course, it allows the production to do some interesting filming in places like St. John's Square in Wakefield, standing in for George in London, but also bits of Croatia they used as well. So interesting stuff, I think, to compare to those bright and breezy Austin and Bridgertons.
Yes, we do. You get something that is sort of grimier, where we see things that are in the streets and not so moneyed, and other parts of the country, and we see what war looks like. So we see some of those contrasts, that while some people are living in luxury, there is a lot more and some much grimmer things that exist in that period of time.
And, you know, I should say there's perhaps not a huge amount of the Duke of Wellington's wars and battles in this show, but the bits that are there were very impressive, I thought, and give us this sort of realism of it. I'm thinking, Brian, particularly of a sequence when a unit has been sent out with Jonathan Strange to somehow enchant a forest that's in their way, and they run into the French, there is a conflict. And that was, I thought, portrayed in a very interesting fashion, and it showed both sides, of course, doing what we might regard as real soldiering. We sometimes get distracted by the bright red uniforms, but there was sort of hard-fought conflict going on as well, Brian.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, the injuries and deaths are there, and people being genuinely afraid of the dangers because they were so ever-present.
Indeed.
Now, there are also some things in this show that are interesting with the depiction of mental illness, with Lady Paul especially, but that's something that's part of this show as well.
Again, I was fascinated by this, Brian. I was not expecting this from this show, but the effects of the enchantment on Lady Paul give her what appears to be a very severe mental illness. And this leads us to some depictions of how people at the time with mental illnesses were treated, literally how they were treated, some of the sort of strange cures that were attempted, and the set strange and rather unpleasant restrictions that were placed upon people who were mentally unwell. We get that with Lady Pole. We also get, of course, King George III, who famously had his own, I'll use the title from the play and the film, his own madness. And that gives us a cameo from an old British Invaders actor, Edward Petherbridge, who was in the Cast in the Ruins TV show we watched years ago, Brian, but also famously played Lord Peter Wimsey on television as well. But I thought the way they handled that was very interesting and, you know, made you think more than just the simple magical fantasy stuff.
Yes, and they also mention more than once that magic cannot cure madness. So even with the presence of magic, they do not give you an easy way out for that, which I thought was very interesting. And some of these older explanations of mental illness being caused by fairy creatures and things like that, they're sort of a reflection on that, where in this show, sometimes that's the case, but not always. There's more to it than that.
Does the expression "away with the fairies" travel across the Atlantic, Brian, as being a sort of perhaps unfortunate phrase used to describe some people suffering mental illness?
It's not one I'm familiar with.
Right. Over here, we do, you know, hopefully we don't say it as much anymore, but we used to say that about people who were unwell, that they were away with the fairies. And this show brought that expression back to my mind.
Oh, interesting. So I think it's now the point where we should talk a bit more about our own thoughts, a bit more than we already have about this show. So, Eamon, what did you like about Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell?
There is loads to like about this show, Brian. I'm going to start with the production values from the BBC. Because this show looks and sounds absolutely fantastic, I guess we would expect the BBC to be completely up to the mark on costumes, hair, makeup, wigs, and the like. But I thought all of that was absolutely terrific, Brian. This look at the clothing and the settings and the locations from this era, but perhaps done in a slightly more realistic way than all the Bridgertons and Austins we've been talking about. What did you make of the production of the show?
It's really a sumptuous production. It does those kinds of things very well. And the magic and the visual effects were also very good. And then you have, you know, people in the countryside and, you know, falling in the woods and this sort of thing. All of that was done well. So yeah, I think the look and feel of it is really quite wonderful.
And of course, as ever, we've got a great cast. What did you make of the performances here?
I really enjoyed the performances across the board. I thought they were all very solid. And the way this work is constructed, almost all of the characters are not one-dimensional. They have something layered in there and something a little complicated. And the interactions between them are tense and are complicated. And it was well cast. And I thought it was all very well done. So the cast and the performances, I thought it was great.
Absolutely. I mean, I enjoyed all the performances here. Of course, we have to mention Mark Warren as the sort of distinctly threatening and magical fairy creature, the Gentleman. Described in the book, I think, as the Gentleman with thistledown hair, an expression I think Emma Pole just uses once in this show. But he has this wonderful wig, the long, sharp fingernails, and this otherworldly menace to him, Brian. He's just superb, isn't he?
Yes, he is, but we get so much from so many of the cast members. It's really very good.
Bertie Carvel as Jonathan Strange is terrific, you know, initially very charismatic and a very sort of optimistic character. Becomes a much darker character as the show progresses, and he has to literally explore and understand mental health problems in order to perhaps finally cross over himself into the Gentleman's world.
What did you think of Eddie Marson as Gilbert Norrell?
Well, this is drifting slightly into, you know, my slight criticism of the show. And I think the problem is that Gilbert Norrell is a rather miserable character who spends, you know, quite happily would spend all his time just collecting and studying his books. He does not want to be involved in practical magic. And he also does not deal very well with the consequences of what happens when he interferes and makes his deal with the Gentleman. I think Eddie Marson had a slightly harder job than perhaps some of the more flamboyant characters. Because, as I've said, Mark Warren and Bertie Carvel, and if you imagine, you know, think about Paul Kay as Vinculus, these are much bigger characters. And Mr. Norrell's a much more subdued, quiet, rather miserable character for him to play.
Yeah, that's interesting. I actually quite liked Eddie Marson as Gilbert Norrell. I thought he brought some subtlety to that, and you could see that he was always uncertain with things, and he was moving from being very reclusive at the beginning, which was probably where he was more comfortable, moving towards being this very well-known, very public character, and he sort of took stock in being so valued and, you know, at the top of the food chain, so to speak, and then he has to deal with not being quite as capable or as unique as he had thought. So I quite like his performance along with everyone else.
Okay, I'm going to mention the two female leads, Charlotte Riley and Alice Englert, who we perhaps haven't mentioned enough, but they both do great work, I think, as Arabella Strange and Lady Emma Pole, particularly, I think, Alice Englert's depiction of a mental health problem, or at least how that appears to the outside world, is fantastic.
Yes, that was an amazing performance, and the all of the levels of that with her knowing she would appear mad and trying not to, and her involvement and conflict with the Fairy King and not being able to tell anyone else and so on, and people ultimately realizing how much she was tied into all of this magic because she was brought back from the dead by it.
Yeah, I mean, it is fascinating and gripping stuff, I think, all of that.
And then the other woman, for Arabella Strange, she has, in some respects, less to do, but she does a lot with it and was also a very interesting character throughout this.
Yeah, fascinating. Now, we've got visual effects for the magic, and I think they worked very well. What did you make of them?
Yes, they do work very well. I don't have any issues with how that was done. I think they worked well, and I think they fit with the aesthetic they were going for with this.
I'm not sure exactly how magic operates in the world of Susanna Clarke and Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell, but perhaps I don't need to dwell on that too much. What is interesting, I know, is that you wanted to talk about how class works in this series.
There is a lot of sort of reflection on classism in this, where we see the sort of upper middle class and the political class and so on, and we also see people who are definitely not there. And we have this dynamic where Mr. Norrell comes in and is clearly the upper class type of magician who is dealing with government and being hailed as this aid to the country, and then Jonathan Strange is clearly viewed as not being quite that, as he has to be a student to Norrell, and he is someone who is clearly a step down. And then we have a couple of other magicians. There are at least two other magicians, because it becomes clear that Childemas is more than just an aide to Norrell. He's the magician himself, and so is Vinculus. So we have a lot going on here where those characters who are lesser in terms of class are much of the time not even included as magicians. There are only two magicians in England, and the others somehow don't count.
Yeah, exactly. They don't count because they're lower class. They're the sort of characters who we don't even know about in the Bridgertons and the Austins. But here they are fascinating, and their development as the show goes on is great. The Pole's servant, Stephen, who plays a major part in all of this, the way his character develops and is handled is also fantastic as well. So, yeah, I loved all that stuff, Brian.
Yeah, I believe the novel is often considered sort of literary fiction or historical fiction that happens to have these magical aspects. And in terms of the characters, the construction of it, the story, it feels very much like a literary type of thing or historical fiction that has these fantastical, magical aspects that are right through the middle of everything. And I think that's part of what's interesting, that it brings you these more complicated character dynamics and these classism issues and the looks at history in a more involved and more vivid way than you might get in some types of fantasy stories.
Yeah. Anything else you wanted to particularly add to the positives column of this show, Brian?
I just want to say that, well, it's all very good. I'm very impressed with that. But I think the fact that this is a story from about 2004 and not something much older changes everything and sort of gives you a more modern take on things like the issues of class and issues of mental illness. And I think that's really interesting too.
Yeah, I thought all that stuff was fascinating. As I've said, I wasn't expecting it from this show, but yeah, great stuff.
So why don't you go on to some negative aspects?
Not many. We've talked about Eddie Marson's performance and whether or not that, you know, he gets less to do or whether he manages to do more with it. It is, I would say, based on an 800-page novel. And as such, there is an awful lot of ground to cover. And even in these 7 hours, they cover a lot. I feel that there's still probably much more to it that we didn't get to. And so some aspects of it I found slightly confusing, but not necessarily in a terribly bad way. I just thought I'd like to spend more time with these characters. What about yourself with the length and the complexity of it?
There is an awful lot going on here, and I enjoyed that, but you do want to approach this as something where there is a lot going on, and it never slows down in 7 hours. You know, there's a lot covered in here, and it sort of demands your attention a little more than some things. You can view that as a plus or a minus. There's a lot here. That was something I quite enjoyed.
Did you have any others in the negative column for this one, Brian?
Not really. You know, it's something where it is what it is. You have to accept the type of storytelling and the type of world that it's building. But all in all, I have very little negative to say about this. I enjoyed it a lot.
Okay. It sounds like we're getting towards recommendations for our listeners, and they can probably tell how we're going to go, I think.
So shall I start in recommendations?
Yes, please do, Ryan.
Okay, so it's a strong recommendation from me. This is a very good serial. It gives us a whole lot to watch and to think about. It has interesting performances and great visuals with lots of layers to the storytelling and to the characters. So there's a lot here. I want to come back to this and watch it again for sure. So absolutely, it's a strong recommendation from me.
So my recommendation comes with a slight confession, which is when it first broadcast in 2015, I only made it through the first 2 episodes, didn't stick with it. And having watched the entire show now, I wish I had stuck with it because I think it's terrific. The performances, the effects, everything about this show I like. I would love to know more about this world. I may have to open that 800-page novel, but I'll perhaps wait for one or two of our listeners to chip in and let me know if I should. But yeah, it's a double thumbs up from us here on British Invaders. We hope you've seen it, or we hope you watch it as a result of this, and you perhaps let us know what you think.
Absolutely. So, in summary, Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell introduced us to a world of the early 1800s with the twist that magic exists but is rare and is not being used very much. And Mr. Norrell is this expert magician who is quite reclusive until he is pulled into London society to work for the government and to do all of these great things. And Jonathan Strange discovers that he is actually very good at magic as well, and becomes a practicing magician himself, and joins Mr. Norrell to study under him, and the two will both do complex things with magic, with a conflict gradually emerging between the two of them and them splitting forces, and with this fairy king known as the Gentleman becoming involved, where Norrell secretly arranges this deal in order to bring Lady Pole back from the dead. And this has lots of consequences for her and for her husband and for many others. And we build this complex situation involving different magicians and politicians and the situations with wars and so on. And we will build to an appropriately involved conclusion.
A magical show. Do please give it a watch and then drop by our socials and let us know what you thought.
Yes, absolutely.
And please come back and join us next time when we're switching to children's television. We're sticking with the BBC. We're looking at a version of The Borrowers from 1992 and 1993, 2 series, and, how often do we say this, Brian, a very impressive cast to talk about next time.
Yes, that should be a fun one for sure. Until then, you can find all of our episodes episodes at BritishInvaders.com. And if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you can find our group there. We are also on both Threads and Instagram as British_Invaders_podcast. So please check us out on the social networks and join us in some conversations there.
Tell us what you thought about Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell, or about our upcoming shows, which we post on the socials, and find us at Voice of Geeks Network at vognetwork.com, where you'll find all your geek-related content, including podcasts and gaming and so much more at vognetwork.com.
Absolutely. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada signing off.
Yes, thank you so much for being with us, and until next time, it's Eamon in England saying, as ever, be careful what you wish for.